In blessing, good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, January 30th, 2015. Good evening, Zimbabwe. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Robert Mugabe took over the chairmanship of the African Union today as the 24th AU summit officially opened in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
With the full knowledge of the onerous responsibility that lies ahead, I humbly accept your collective decision. I do so confident that I can always count on your full support.
The Morgan Tsvangirai-led MDC says it has filed an urgent constitutional court application seeking to stop the sitting of the nomination courts for two by-elections scheduled for March.
Before an election is done, there must be voter registration. And an election starts with the nomination court. In an election, you want to choose candidates who are on the voter roll. You don't start by an election, declaring an election date and trying to register voters.
And the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe has petitioned President Robert Mugabe, calling him to reinstitute corporal punishment.
President Robert Mugabe took over the chairmanship of the African Union today as the 24th AU summit officially opened in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa. The 90-year-old Zimbabwean leader replaced Mauritania's President Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz, whose term ended today. Studio 7's Sandra Nyaira has more details from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
President Mugabe had the assembling stitches in his acceptance speech as he went down memory lane, narrating his memories of attending the AU's forerunner, the Organization of African Unity, or AU, in 1963 as a representative of ZANU during the liberation struggle. In a speech that received much applause and was described by many interviewed by Studio 7 as funny, sensible and effective, Mr. Mugabe expressed what he said was his deep gratitude and appreciation to his colleagues for electing him AU chair.
With the full knowledge of the onerous responsibility that lies ahead, I humbly accept your collective decision. I do so confident that I can always count on your full support and cooperation in the execution of the important mandate you have given me.
The president's speech lacked the usual anger that is commonly associated with him. He didn't bash the West but joked about God not giving them eyes to see retake. The president's speech lacked the usual anger that is commonly associated with him. He didn't bash the West but joked about God not giving them eyes to see vast natural resources like oil being discovered in many African countries, adding Africa is for Africans and so are its resources, which he said should be used for the benefit of his people.
During my tenure as chair, I will deliberately provoke your thoughts to pay special attention to issues of infrastructure, value addition and beneficiation, agriculture and climate change in the context of Africa's development.
Mr. Mugabe received much applause when he officially launched the theme of the summit and AU, which declared the 2015 as the year of women empowerment and development towards Agenda 2063.
The theme offers us a great opportunity as Africa to strengthen our initiatives and to consolidate the gains we have made in the area of gender equality and women empowerment.
In her speech, AU Commission Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma urged African leaders to deal with issues affecting the continent's growth, in particular terrorism in West Africa and trouble spots in Central Africa, among other issues. She said Agenda 2063, the continent's blueprint for development in the next 50 years, will be put before the heads of state for adoption today, adding everyone in Africa has a role to play in making sure the plan delivers, in particular, creating jobs and getting the continent out of poverty.
It is this changing world with threats and opportunities that Africa navigates as it finalizes its vision for the next 50 years. Our generations of Africans, young and old men and women, face the challenge to fulfill the mission we set ourselves.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon also spoke at the official launch of the summit, urging African leaders to respect term limits and leave office when their time runs out, adding they should also accept defeat in elections. He said Africa needs to do more to rid the continent of the scourge of violence that it says continues to affect women and girls. Mr. Ban emphasized the need for the continent to empower women, adding ignoring women and their rights can only lead to the downfall of a nation. The summit touched on many issues, including Ebola, terrorism, funding for the AU, peace and stability, and related issues. Reporting for Studio 7 from Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Some critics say Mr. Mugabe remains a lightning rod between Africa and the West, and his chairmanship will be turbulent. Mr. Mugabe is also subject to travel bans from both the United States and European Union in protest at alleged political violence and intimidation. Last year, he boycotted a European Union-Africa summit in Brussels after he was given a rare invitation, but his wife, Grace, was denied a visa. United States President Barack Obama last year also hosted the U.S.-Africa summit, and Mr. Mugabe did not make it the list of the invited guests. International Crisis Group's Southern Africa Project Director Pius Pigu tells Blessing Zulu that the elevation of Mr. Mugabe is not a vote of confidence on him.
This is not necessarily a vote of confidence from the leadership of the African Union. This is a rotational rote process which has little more than symbolic value. However, what Mr. Mugabe does with that platform will, of course, be interesting. At his age, he has a tendency to focus on a retrospective analysis of what he thinks is wrong, as opposed to progressive and forward-looking thinking about what challenges face the continent. So let's see if Mr. Mugabe is going to use that platform for building bridges as opposed to berating and pointing fingers at the responsibility of other countries and continents that he believes are the reason for Africa's continued struggles.
But can we not say this is an endorsement by his fellow African leaders? I mean, looking at the fact that in 2007, after the West rejected to the Sudanese president, Ghana ended up taking the AU chairmanship.
Yes. Well, it's important, Blessing, to remember that there is a qualitative distinction between the violations that al-Bashir is held responsible for and accused of and Robert Mugabe. Having said that, that doesn't take away issues of culpability. But the politics around Zimbabwe by the African leadership is such that there has been an attempt to bring Mr. Mugabe back into the fold after endorsing a period of unity or coalition politics in Zimbabwe. And so one could say he was given a clean slate from which to build. However, I would be surprised if there were many true disciples of Robert Mugabe amongst the African leadership there. So many people see this year of Mugabe's chairmanship as almost a thank you and a final swan song for Mr. Mugabe on the continental platform.
Mr. Mugabe is also subject to travel bans from both the United States and European Union. What does this mean?
Quite correctly, you point to a prospective area that could result in some further tensions, which would have ripples and repercussions beyond bilateral relations with Zimbabwe. And the United States and the European Union should tread cautiously with respect to this, and maybe with respect to his very specific role as African Union chairman, provide some exemptions to that travel ban for any high-level meetings that require Mr. Mugabe's attendance in the United States or Europe.
That was International Crisis Group's Southern Africa Project Director Pius Pigu speaking with VOA Studio 7 reporter Blessing Zulu from Pretoria, South Africa.
But a former Zimbabwe Deputy Information Minister and a member of the ruling ZANU-PF party, Dr. Bright Matonga, tells a VOA Studio 7 reporter Blessing Zulu that the elevation of Mr. Mugabe is an endorsement of his leadership by African leaders.
It cannot be about human rights, definitely. And you heard my views on the issue of human rights. It should only and can only be that he is not capable of sharing the African Union, nothing else. He is one of the most, if not the educated leader in the world. And he is capable, and the African Union have got confidence in the leadership. There hasn't been any opposition to his elevation. We let that chairmanship go to other countries when we had our bilateral issues with the United Kingdom. Now those issues are a thing of the past. There are private talks ongoing between the Zimbabwean government and the EU and the United Kingdom. That's why we had a huge French delegation coming to Zimbabwe. End of last year, we had the British delegation coming over to Zimbabwe, which shows that there is a realization that we need to engage and engage in a positive manner.
There are some who are saying Mr. Mugabe must concentrate on the economic problems in Zimbabwe.
We are an African country. We are part of the AU. It's within the mandate of SADC for any head of state to lead the African Union SADC Commission. Zimbabwe is not the only country that has got economic challenges. Honestly, surely, Europe is in a mess. They're all rushing to China. So really, for anyone to talk about President Mugabe concentrating on the Zimbabwean issue, I think it's a bit on the naive side. He is the incoming chairperson, and people have to get used to that, to his chairmanship.
That was former Zimbabwe Deputy Information Minister and a member of the ruling ZANU-PF party, Dr. Bright Matonga, speaking with VOA Studio 7 reporter Blessing Zulu from Harare. Direct from Washington, the voice
of America, VOA. The Morgan Tsvangirai-led MDC says it has filed an urgent constitutional court application seeking to stop the sitting of the nomination courts for two by-elections scheduled for March in Mount Darwin West and Chirumanzi, Zimbabwe, arguing the process is flawed. The nomination court sat in Gweru yesterday and indicated that the by-elections in Chirumanzi, Zimbabwe, will be held March 27th. Five candidates will contest the election, including Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa's wife, Auxilia. The two seats fell vacant following the elevation of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa and former Vice President Joyce Mujuru to the presidium. The party's Secretary General, Douglas Monzora, tells the reporter Standekile Mhlanga that according to the country's new constitution, the voters' roll should have been prepared by the Zimbabwe Election Commission instead of the Registrar General.
We are seeking three orders. The first order is that certain sections of the Electoral Act, which was promulgated last year by the government and which was fast-tracked in Parliament, do not accord with the Constitution. Specifically, that before any election is done, there must be a voters' roll which is prepared and kept and maintained by the Zimbabwe Election Commission. Right now, the Zimbabwe Election Commission does not have a voters' roll and has not compiled one. The voters' roll, that is there is a voter roll which has been compiled by Tobayo Amubebe plus Miku. Now, the law now says that the voter roll compiled by anybody who is not Zimbabwe Election Commission is not a voter roll and is cannot be a basis for an election. So our challenge is that an election held without a voter roll prepared by the Zimbabwe Election Commission is null and void. And therefore, that the elections that are going to be done in the two constituencies not go ahead because the law has not been followed.
What do you think are your chances for success, seeing that the voter registration and inspection of voters' roll has already begun?
Well, number one is that before an election is done, there must be voter registration. And an election starts with the nomination court. In an election, you want to choose candidates who are on the voter roll. You don't start by an election declaring an election date and trying to register voters.
That was Douglas Mwanzora, MDCT Secretary General, on the line with Studio 7's Tandekile Mhlanga from Harare.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
The issue of corporal punishment that has divided the nation for some time has been pushed into the national spotlight once again, this time by the Progressive Teachers Union, which has petitioned President Mugabe to reinstitute it. Corporal punishment was outlawed by the new constitution that now says it infringes upon the rights of children. However, PTUZ in its petition argues that there is an increase in cases of indiscipline at schools following its abolishment. But some parents and human rights activists believe that the alleged surge in the number of indiscipline has nothing to do with the sparing of the rod, but socio-economic factors. Legal expert Alex Magaisa told Studio 7 that from a human rights perspective, corporal punishment is not a good thing because it discriminates girls from boys who are usually on the receiving end of the cane.
I believe that corporal punishment, although it is used moderately by some people, there are others who have been very excessive in how they use it, and I think they have spoiled it for many other people who otherwise would have exercised it reasonably.
We see that the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe is trying to petition President Mugabe to reinstitute corporal punishment in the new constitution. Do you see that happening?
Well, you know what? Nothing is impossible in Zimbabwe. I have learned to accept that everything is possible. My view is that the issue of corporal punishment is covered in the constitution. As I articulated in my article that I've written regarding how this clause was negotiated, new corporal punishment for adults was outlawed many years ago in 1987 by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court even outlawed it for children in 1989 in another case, but the government then reversed that decision of the Supreme Court by amending the constitution to say that moderate corporal punishment would be allowed in certain circumstances. If people argue that corporal punishment is an effective tool for disciplining children, then why is it confined only to the boys and not to the girls?
That was legal expert Alex Magaisa speaking on the line with Studio 7 from London.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
A look at regional and international news.
Pakistani authorities say at least 58 people were killed and more than 50 others wounded in a powerful bomb blast at a minority Shia mosque in Sindh province during Friday prayers. The bombing occurred in Lakhida area of Shikarpur, around 470 kilometers north of the city of Karachi. Several of those wounded were said to be in a critical condition. Jundala, a splinter group of the Pakistani Taliban, claimed responsibility for the attack.
The Islamic State group's affiliate in Egypt says it is responsible for a series of attacks on security personnel in the Sinai Peninsula Thursday that killed at least 26 people. The province of Sinai claimed responsibility for the multiple assaults that took place within hours of each other. Officials say the insurgents' weapons were aimed at a military base and a hotel in the town of Al-Arish, where police and military officers live.
And the fate of two Islamic State hostages, a Japanese journalist and a Jordanian Air Force pilot, remained unknown today, a day after the latest deadline passed for a prisoner swap. Jordan's military said officials were working nonstop on the case of pilot Mutar al-Kasabest, who was captured after his jet crashed in Syria last month. Islamic State militants had threatened to kill him if Jordan did not release Iraqi prisoner Sajida al-Rashiwa by sunset Thursday. Al-Rashiwa is on death row in Jordan for her role in a deadly 2005 bombing in Amman.
A 2015 marks the end of the United Nations Millennium Development Goals, which, when introduced in 2000, sought to address extreme poverty throughout the world. The goals, also known as MDGs, target poverty, hunger, disease, shelter, and exclusion, while promoting gender equality, education, and environmental sustainability. Some critics question if developing countries are able to make tangible scores in the MDGs. The Zimbabwe United Nations Association says it is challenging to implement some of the goals. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to Zimbabwe United Nations Association's youth president, Makleo Mapfumo, who explains the challenges with the Millennium Goals.
The main reasons why they failed is because an ordinary person could not have a say towards them, like the people in the grassroots and especially like civil society organizations. They could not contribute to the Millennium Development Goals. And you can see most of them, they were crafted in the year 2000. And by the time we reached 2015, no one knew about them. People started to know about them last year. And now they are now transiting to sustainable development goals, yet people didn't even know or did not even contribute to the MDGs.
Speaking on the sustainable development goals, some of them focus on the issue of education, promoting gender equality, improvement of maternal health, HIV/AIDS, and so many more. What do you think should be done this time around to make sure that countries, including Zimbabwe, are able to better implement these goals?
I think the whole issue of inclusivity from all stakeholders should play a pivotal role, and being able also to share ideas. If you look at most of the goals which are there, most of them they're focusing on the issue of global partnerships. And if you look at our partnerships with other countries, it's not really strong. So it means we cannot get basic ideas on how to deal with some issues that are in our country. So it needs everyone's participation towards this whole process and come up with ideas that are soluble so that they can actually make this issue a good idea.
That was Zimbabwe United Nations Association's Youth President Makleo Mapfumo speaking with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
Now here's a brief summary of some issues in Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwean truck drivers working for a South African company, Manline Freight, who have been on strike for at least a week, now demanding better working conditions and other issues, say the firm is not attempting to forcibly take the vehicles from them as a way of resolving the conflict. The drivers who spoke to Studio 7 today said company executives have instructed a security firm in Harare to drive the vehicles to safe locations in Zimbabwe and South Africa. They say they are not surrendering the truck keys to East Trek. They claim that East Trek attempted to use spare keys to repossess the vehicles. There was no comment from Mainline Freight and East Trek. The trucks supply various goods to countries in the Southern African region.
Direct from Washington.
The The continued dry spell in Zimbabwe has resulted in panic amongst farmers who say their crops are beginning to wilt while at a crucial tasseling stage. This comes at a time when the meteorological department says it does not have funds to do cloud seeding to help in dry areas. Although the Met Department says the country is likely to experience showers this week, this excludes Matabeleland South and Maswingo and parts of Midlands and Manicaland, where the dry spell is set to continue. Farmers in these areas have been urged to take up conservation farming as it is more likely to yield harvest than conventional crop cultivation. Direct from Washington,
the voice of America, VOA. The Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe last night launched a revised code of conduct for media practitioners. The code, which was published in English, has been translated to Shona, Ndebele, and Tonga. Speaking at launch of the code, VMC's Ethics Committee Chairperson Tafuma Chakaire said the translation was in conformity with the new constitution, which recognizes 16 national languages. He said by translating the code into local languages, the organization would reach out to the majority of the population. Media practitioners, lawmakers, and civil society welcomed the translation of the code, saying it meant the majority of the population now understand it can take up their complaints to the VMCZ if they have been wronged by the media. Meanwhile, the VMCZ said it received 33 complaints last year, and most of these were mostly against privately owned newspapers. Most of the complaints were recorded in Harare, Bulawayo, and Mashinko. Notably, no complaints were received against tabloids such as H-Metro and B-Metro.
And finally, the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation has stepped up its efforts to collect radio and television licenses in a bid to improve its coffers to finance the migration from analog to digital broadcasting. Officers from the Licensing Inspectorate and the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority are reported to be working alongside police at roadblocks demanding radio licenses. Zimbabwe, the only country in the world still on analog broadcast, needs about $30 million to cross over to the digital platform. Time is running out for the country because the International Telecommunications Union's deadline for this migration is June this year. Former radio personality Ezra Chisasbanda, who is one of the people seeking a commercial radio license, tells Studio 7 the delay in switching over has shortchanged Zimbabweans because analog broadcast is very poor.
And now an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The people of Zambia have elected a new president, choosing Defense and Justice Minister Edgar Lunga to finish the term of former President Michael Sata, who died in office last fall. In closely contested balloting January 20th, hampered by heavy rains across much of the southern African nation, Lunga edged businessman Hakainde Hichilema with 48.3% of the vote. The United States congratulates the people of the Republic of Zambia for conducting another democratic election. Facing significant logistical challenges, Zambians went to the polls to uphold their democratic traditions and set an example for African nations and for the world. We acknowledge the important work of the Electoral Commission of Zambia and its chair, as well as the domestic, regional, and international monitoring groups. We hope that any issues will be resolved in the same spirit and democratic tradition. We encourage the people of Zambia to move forward, as their national motto states, as one Zambia, one nation. We look forward to continuing to strengthen our relationship with the government of the Republic of Zambia and its newly elected president, Edgar Lungu. Together, our two nations have a strong friendship on which to build. The United States and Zambia cooperate on providing health care to those most in need, promoting peace and security in the region, attracting investment, and on spurring economic development. We look forward to building an even more dynamic and positive partnership in the years to come.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about the African Union Summit in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, where President Mugabe has been named the head of the AU.
And now to recap today's top stories.
President Robert Mugabe took over the chairmanship of the African Union today as the 24th AU summit officially opened in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
The MDCT says it has filed an urgent constitutional court application seeking to stop the sitting of the nomination courts for two by-elections in the country.
And the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe has petitioned President Robert Mugabe, calling for him to reinstitute corporal punishment.
That's our broadcast this evening.
This is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.